Channel 2 Right and the beginning of the visit with Rick this Tuesday at lunch, the 8th of August, 72. Channel 2 Right and the beginning of the visit with Rick this Tuesday, the 8th of August, 72. Channel 2 Right and the beginning of the visit with Rick this Tuesday, the 8th of August, 72. Channel 2 Right and the beginning of the visit with Rick this Tuesday, the 8th of August, 72. To right and beginning the visit with Rick this Tuesday at lunch. This Tuesday at lunch, the 8th of August, 72.
The dough?
Yeah. You saw a little biscuit thing.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't guess it matters. I see you've been sitting here 15 minutes and said a word.
I'm going to, though.
No. He comes over here. He ought to come over here talking and not listening. That's his business here. Now, when I go in, Miss Mary's, I honk my horn. Honk my horn. Let them know somebody's there. I honk it so they can hear it. And I do that everywhere I go. And I get out talking. They can't hear what I say, it don't matter. But I get out talking. And I've learned how to talk. You see, he's still got his goddamn mouth shut, Faye.
I don't usually butt in on people.
He can take a hold.
Oh, shoot.
What are you going to do? Just say we're going to have a moment of silence while they get wound up?
Sorry, I'm just having to be polite with you.
Polite is it? One thing you don't want to be. You want to be project. And you see, you still have to pick it
up. Shooting.
Well, we got one darn good performance, I thought, last night out of Shimwell. And he was perched over there by the door. He's always got that tie on.
Really?
I don't think yes, but he and Walt Evelyn are the only ones that wear a tie. Shimwell fills out his shirts, kind of bulges in them.
Yeah.
He spent the whole night over by the door with his foot propped up on the chair. See, I was surprised he had on. They were casual shoes. They were like a suede. I figured he'd have something hard leather and shiny on. He'd lean on that knee all night and just look all around. But every time somebody makes a suggestion is when he would start talking, he wouldn't bring up issues.
Yeah.
And he'd always take issue with suggestions. And the way they had the trouble with the trash. Well, as soon as the issue was brought up by Troy, it just fell apart and everybody started talking about it, giving suggestions on what to do, and Wade made the comment that you ought to get a committee to work on this because nobody knows what's going on. Nobody did. Wade had it lined out for him there that the committee would be the best thing to do. And Shimwell...
Now what threw you off there is you started with that always. You're generalizing. You want to go hit right square dab into the case. Wade said
that they needed a committee to go in and find out who could pick up the trash and how much it would cost them and where they could take it.
And Shimwell came right along and supported him and told him.
Shimwell said, no, that's not what they needed at all. Shimwell said, and he'd take one hand out and put a fist in it. He says, what we need is trash pickup. We need trash pickup now.
Yeah.
It was pretty late at night then, I thought. Shimwell says, matter of fact, I'll pick trash up if you can get me, let me buy a truck. I'll go pick it up, except that I don't know how much you pay. Well, Walt Evelyn just muttered under his breath, $35 a month, but he wouldn't say it out. Council fell apart again. Nobody could tell what they were talking about.
Yeah.
And they kept saying, we want the county contractors to take care of it. And Ward was mumbling something, and Troy was trying to keep the both of them going. Wade gave up, and just, you know how Wade will put that arm across the shoulder like that and turn and look at me and just laugh, and he'd look over at Walt and said, Walt would say, well, Wade, why don't you try your motion again? Wade said, why don't you try it, Walt? And Walt said, why don't we let Shimwell do it? Shimwell didn't say anything more until finally someone at council came out after Walt had asked them what they were doing and said, oh, we're going to appoint a committee to take care of it. Wade just shook his head.
Yeah, that was right nice. Who said that? One of the councilmen.
Yeah.
Walt, up on the council, wasn't it?
Ward announced that's what they had decided,
yeah.
But nobody knew who decided it.
That was cute. That's right, Faye. That's
right.
As fine a case as I ever saw. I didn't see it as much as he did.
They had a gentleman sitting next to me who was wearing, he was wearing an old white shirt like he couldn't buy anymore. It was a thin, light material. And he looked like he was getting up in years, you know, wrinkled, but he had these real bushy, horny eyebrows and this nice white hair, a very pleasant-looking face. And they recognized him because he was their special. He was from a Florida Historical Society. So he stood up, and he had some papers with him. And he spoke about some research they had done on Micanopy. And said they wanted to donate a plaque to the city, to the town, and then they could place the plaque wherever they wanted if they'd accept it. And then he read off just what they were going to put on the plaque. A very concise report of just when Micanopy was founded and who did it and some of the military action around that area and all the dates. Up until about, I guess, about 1821 or somewhere when the town just started growing without military forts and stuff around
there. Oh, he got back to DeSoto.
Yes, he went way back to, I guess, 1500 and when the Indians were in that area. And then who was there when DeSoto came through? It was Tecumseh or something like
that.
Yeah.
And then old Bartram?
I don't remember.
Bartram is the one you can read sometime. I've read it.
Yeah. And then there was Fort Defiance, was right near there in the Second Seminole War.
Yeah,
I'd forgotten
that.
Yeah, that was in the about 1821, I think. And then in 1826, they changed the name to Micanopy. Well, he said after he read it, says, that's my business. He stated it just like he'd been very practiced at all this. All the council had to do was accept it. It was free. And they started discussing it. Walt just looked around, waved, and said, it's free. All I have to do is accept it. But the council wasn't discussing whether they'd accept it or not. They'd already passed that without even deciding what to do about it. They wanted to know who was going to place it.
Oh.
Well, they start talking among themselves, and all the people were talking among themselves. There was no order. Nobody could tell what was going on. So Wade made another suggestion, and he said, why don't you all have the Friends of the Library Historical Committee look into it? It says they can give us some suggestions. Well, Troy asked if there was anybody here from the Historical Society, and Walt said, well, my wife's president of it. So she stood up, and they go, well, they hadn't asked her a question. She just went, we were going to do a historical survey of the main street here about some historical buildings, but now we're no way connected with this plaque, but we can look into it and see about having a place to put it. Council kind of liked the idea, and we're going to pass it, but then Shimwell spoke up. Shimwell says he didn't like the idea. Shimwell said that he didn't see why just the Friends of his library should be the ones to pick it out where it was supposed to go. Says he was part of the people. He said all the people should have a voice in this. Miss Evelyn says anybody can join Friends of the Library Historical Society. If Shimwell wasn't about to be put down, he said, well, some of us might not know about it, or we may not have time, or we may not be interested in it either. So the council just said, well, Mr. Shimwell, the suggestion is subject to our approval. It doesn't necessarily mean that's where we're going to put it. And that quieted Shimwell down. Okay, as long as I know it's subject to your approval, that's all right. So they went ahead and turned it over to the society. Well, you know, the thing is, when they presented that plaque, see, that went into discussion on the council. Well, there was so much going on. Walt, he'd done this several times during the night, had to keep asking, what are you all discussing now? And when he asked, you know, they'd presented the plaque, he asked, and Ward said the fire department. Well, we had Mr. Barr's water report just after the plaque, and we thought the plaque had been settled. And Ward comes up and says the fire department. And Wade says, did you all ever decide to even accept the plaque? I said, oh yeah, I said, we're going to accept the plaque. So they got that cleared up, and then Mr. Barr was up on the floor then. So that kind of just steered the council a little bit to go back into the water report and get it taken care of. They must have spent the next hour on that. Mr. Barr, you know, Mr. Barr gives this report. He's very precise about it. He starts with every figure and every account and goes right down the line and adds them all up and tells you what he's got left. And then he'll tell you about his delinquent accounts. He says, we've got 16, and as you know, by this time of the month, almost half of those are collected. If they're not collected, we'll cut the water off. Well, the thing is, it came out in the paper, I guess last week, the ordinance on the water. And the ordinance states in it that if you're not hooked up by the 1st of January, 72, you're going to be fined. Mr. Barr said the ordinance was written in 1968. And that fine should have taken place then. And Mr. Brigman wanted to know, he's acting fire chief now, it's John Brigman. He wanted to know why it was all of a sudden they were going to enforce the ordinance. And he asked Ward. Ward said he didn't know anything about it. He hadn't signed his name to the ordinance. He said, well, your name was on it in the newspaper. He says, the mayor signed my name to it. You just hear the guffaws. It just ran right from the council all the way back to the people. Wade turned around and says, now that's the kind of thing we get him fired for. So Mr. Brigman suggested, no, it was Mr. Shimwell. He suggested that they just cancel that out and do it over again and make it legal. And I think that was the third piece of business that night that they'd had to cancel out and do over again to make it legal. Because they never got it in the minutes right every time, or they just leave it out of the minutes altogether. Well, Shimwell wasn't content to just let him get going on discussing that water thing. He said, I want to know what the ordinance is. I want that in the minutes. Made Troy read the whole ordinance. It's one of these legal things, whereof, therefore, with just the starting of a sentence and just one clause after another, you don't know what it said. We finished reading it, Shimwell kind of tilts his head back, and he wouldn't say anything else the whole rest of the time they were discussing that Walker thing. He was content. He'd gotten it into the minutes, see? He didn't pay attention to whether people liked it or not. Well, Brigman was the one that took issue with it because he said he was going to have to pay $110 to go in. Well, they only paid $10 when they first started. He didn't see why he had to pay $110. And why it was that he was paying so much money, he says, am I buying the meter? Mr. Barr said, no. He says, what's $110 for? He says, well, $50 is for the meter, $28 is for the labor, $28 is for the fittings, the rest for the labor, and then there's some deposit. He says, well, how much do the meters cost? He says, it costs $50. He says, then I'm buying the meter, and it's mine. He says, no, it's not yours. Brigman couldn't fight on that. So what he did, he just told them that the water they were putting out was full of slime and sludge, and he heard it was tearing up people's water pipes. Russell Woodard was sitting over between the doors. Now, Russell's a big, tall fellow. And Russell had stood in the doorway for a little while, then early in the meeting, he came in a little short chair off a desk, of an elementary school chair. And he sat down. And when he sat down, everybody just chuckled because his legs would fly out, and his knees way up in the air. He just grinned. He'd stand all the way up, and he'd start complaining about the sludge. And he said, as a matter of fact, you've got to have a water purifier hooked to your house before you can use that water. I told him he was out of order. I felt so sorry for him because he had to go and sit all the way back down in that little chair, you know, and the legs were tucked under on one side, and he had to keep a leg propped out to hold himself up. Well, Walt said he didn't have any trouble on his side of town. Just like over there. And Mr. Barr said that the woman that complained last week, I forgot her name, she was sitting back there on the window ledge, said she complained about slime, but he'd gone over and checked the water and houses on each side of her and hadn't found anything. Someone called out that someone on one side of her never used enough water to know what it was. Said, well, I couldn't...
In a meeting?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Said, I couldn't find anything there, so I don't know what to do about it. And Jack Sanders says, that's because you all just ignore this side of town. Where Jack is. Says, I don't get no skeeter sprayers. I don't get roads paved. I don't get good water. Well, Brigman said, we're not talking about skeeter sprayers. We're talking about the water. Jack says, well, that's what I mean. They just ignore us over there on that side of town. Jack had to say, he got up and left. He went out and stood in the doorway for a little while, and then he was gone.
Oh.
Yeah. Well. Brigman was still sure they had that sludge. And Russell popped up again. He says, you know what it is? Is not flushing out the main. Says they haven't flushed out the main in my place for 2 years now. Well, you got all this talk going and all this mumbling that it keeps falling apart and nobody can tell what's going on. So Buster in the back just kind of spoke up in just a kind of light voice of his. It always sounds so jolly. He said, we got a man back here worked for 2 years at Gainesville Water Department. Why don't you ask him? He's kind of an expert on it. That fellow just said that if you don't drain the tank every 90 days, if you don't drain off the sludge that settles in it, you're going to get the sludge running through the pipes, he says, and you're going to get that sediment there in the tank because it put chlorine in. But you got to put the chlorine in. They asked Mr. Barr, when was that done? He said, oh, about a year ago. So Brigman sat down and said, well, if it's only once a year he's draining that tank, then I think we got the wrong man running the water department. Mr. Barr didn't flinch. He always just talks with a calm voice, and he's got all the facts right there. And whenever he talked to Brigman, he wouldn't give him a one-word answer. He'd explain the whole way the water place worked, just how they had to pay each bit of that $100 and what it was for, and how they collected the bills, and when they collected the bills, and how many days grace they'd give you if you didn't pay your bill on time. And then on just about what date they'd cut it off and how much it was going to cost you to have it hooked back up again. Well, the council was pretty much convinced by then that they had problems with the water. And there were a lot of people complained about it. So they said they'd get the Water Board of Health to check it. Brigman wouldn't settle. He said they've been checking for that every month for the last 3 or 4 years. And they've always found the water drinkable. He says, I know it's drinkable. I just won't want the sludge in it. He says, I won't settle. If you all want to have it checked, it can't be the State Board of Health. So they had to decide whether to give Mr. Barr the authority to have a chemical analysis run on the water and take it up to Black's laboratory. And that took them about half an hour, I guess. Just throwing that back down inside the council, whether he could have it done. And Russell started complaining, how much is that going to cost? And Walt said, Russ, nothing's free anymore. That shut Russ up again. Well, they finally decided, and then somebody told Mr. Barr, and I just don't take one jug of water up there, and said, oh no, I'll get samples from all around town. But he said he couldn't guarantee he'd have it back by the next meeting because I just don't know how fast Black's laboratory is going to work. So they managed to put that off, and Brigman kind of got his way about not having it hook up right away, but he still isn't convinced about buying that meter. And Walt Evelyn brought up that was in the stipulations by the federal government when the FHA made the loan to put in the water system. He said the council has nothing to do with that. The council told him that's true. He says, well, let me see the agreement. Nobody had the agreement there, except Ms. Cruz had signed it, but it wasn't in the minutes. So he shook his head and he said, well, I won't believe you until I see the agreement. He said, okay, we'll show it to you next meeting. So he sat down and he was quiet. And they just left it like that. So I suppose that ordinance is still up in the air. They haven't enforced it yet. and they're going to have to prove to everybody that they've got water worthwhile taking before they get everybody to hook all those meters up.
Mr. Spears walked up to the front.
Yeah.
And I walked up back here.
Mm-hmm.
And this happened at the post office. He said their commode was running over. And they called him. I don't know why. He talked as if he was a maintenance man down there. And he said he took the lid off and he found that it wasn't the commode that was running off. It was the reservoir.
Mm-hmm.
I said, what's that? Well, he said he called anything a reservoir where the water was standing. He said there was much sludge in there, you see, that it wouldn't cut off. And it was the reservoir running over. And he took out, he said, a gallon or two of sludge.
Yeah. You know, I stepped out. I stayed through the fire part, but I couldn't. I was so full by then, I could hardly keep up with anything. So I stepped out, and George Wilson was there by the door. So both of us stepped outside, and he said, "Well, I'm gonna get him now." I said, "Tonight?" He says, "No, I'll let him go a little longer." And then he mentioned something about them having secret meetings. So they're going to get it pretty soon, though. You know, you just kind of walk on down toward his house, and they turn, come back in, stand at the door. And Officer Good is there, and he just keeps shaking his head. Well, during that time...
Well, the officer was there?
Yeah, he showed up late at the meeting.
Oh, I see.
They'd started reading an ordinance to put in business licenses. And how much they charge and who they charge. The long, long ordinance with paragraphs and A, B, and C, and then all the exceptions. And Troy read it, and I sat about halfway through it. I couldn't take any more of it, so I got up, stepped outside the door. And I think the only person that was paying attention to it was Ward, because he had a copy of it. He could read along with him. Well, after they'd read it, I guess they figured it would pass right through the council, but Wade wouldn't let them. I could hear Wade talking, saying the ordinance was antiquated. Shimwell spoke up, and from his point of view, he says it wasn't antiquated. He says it was a perfectly good ordinance, because it had been written by a lawyer. He says you can't question legality. He says, go ahead and pass it. If you have trouble with it, you can rescind it. And if somebody takes issue with it, they can always take it to court. Wade couldn't put his point across to Shimwell that it wasn't illegal or anything. He said it just wasn't any good. But Shimwell kept saying, well, it's a legal ordinance, why can't you pass it? And that's the way Shimwell always looks at it. If it's legal, then you can pass it. And if you don't like it, you can rescind it. And Walt and Wade were trying to tell him that why pass an ordinance that isn't going to work to begin with? And he said, well, it's based on the Constitution. Wade said, well, the Constitution's antiquated too. And he said, as a matter of fact, I think the whole ordinance is bullshit. And Ward looked out and said, well, we just won't have that kind of talk around here now. So I stepped on out the door and just left after that.
Now, Ward is the one that must have said he didn't have sense enough to be having that. Spare wheel off to roll it down the street without somebody telling him how to do it.
Yeah.
Isn't that what you said?
Right. You have to give him directions.
And they just speak up all over the place.
As soon as just the slightest break in order came about, everybody started talking and everybody started laughing. When they were working on that trash report, Troy started out. They just finished some business, and there was a lull. And Troy started in the next business. Well, he didn't say we had a garbage problem. He started complaining that he was having to go out and separate the garbage because his wife wasn't doing it. Well, he didn't get another word out. The place just broke up. he kept serious, and he said, and he went on to complain about how he'd heard a friend of his had a private collector taking care of the garbage, and he didn't have to separate his garbage. Well, everybody threw their 2 cents in then, and it got lost up in the mumble, and then the water report was coming in, and Wade was trying to say something, and he said, wait a minute. He said, well, this is trash. And it broke everybody up again. Now, later on in the meeting, Troy went out and got a board to use as a gavel. And when he brought it in, it would have been a good time to use it because they were all mumbling again. Well, Ward set it down. Waited till they finally got the business settled. Then he picked it up and beat it on the table at the corner. Just kind of thumb, you know, very dull thud. You couldn't really tell what it was. And look up and smile at everybody because they were laughing too. Said, I'm just trying to bring about some order. So, I figured he'd take the board flat down and smack it on the table. Just shut everybody up. Just timid with it.
But you felt that everybody was pretty good humored.
They were just laughing the whole time at everything that went on. There's a black couple sitting next to me. Only reason he'd come to the meeting was to request a street light. He'd already checked out everything. And he kept looking at me and saying, I don't know when to ask him. And as soon as the water report had calmed down, they were getting ready to go on the fire report. Troy had gotten some order about the place. He was getting a little hot under the collar. And he said, now, we're trying to conduct important business here. And this black gentleman said, I don't know if I want to interrupt their important business. I said, oh, go ahead. Go ahead and ask them. They won't mind. So he raised a hand, and they said, we're about to go on this important business. He says, well, I just have a little request. So Troy and Ward talked it over, and they decided they'd let him speak. And he requested a streetlight. Ward said, well, have you got a pole nearby? I said, yes, sir. And he asked him a few other questions. He'd already checked in everything. And he said, well, all right. That I'd also like to see about getting the stagnant water pulled out of the ditch or drainage put in it. Ward said, the state has to take care of that. He says, yeah, I know the state has to take care of that, but do I ask the state or does the council ask the state? Walt said, you ought to get the council to ask the state. They got a little more weight than you do. He said, but that doesn't mean you don't have to ask them too. It'll help if you ask. Just push on a little bit. So the council agreed they'd go ask and that he could go ahead and have his light put in. As soon as he finished asking his request, he was up and out the door.
Oh, was he?
Oh, yeah.
I saw them leave. he was the one that had that big, that dressed up girl.
Yeah, very, very good looking woman. They sat through 3/4 of that meeting.
Yeah. But then when he stayed in business, he left.
Mm-hmm. That happened a couple times last meeting. They come in and just ask and go.
That man who talked on the trash, that colored man, he was cute.
He was right behind me, just a little ways over. Thin fella. You stand up, he'd wobble a little bit. And you think he'd been drinking or something, but I don't think he had. And his voice was a little wobbly. And in the middle of all this talk about the trash and how much they're going to charge, he stood up and says, I don't have any garbage. I got a little paper bag now and then, but I have a hole back there, I burn it. And I don't have but 30 tin cans a month. Why do I have to pay $4 to have somebody pick that up? I don't need that picked up. I got a place for it.
And you're nice.
$4 a month they charge.
Troy was trying to get around it, and I didn't understand what Troy was saying. Something about it wasn't the charge, or that the county would pay for it, or something. But Clara Cruz was over there on the end, and when they started talking about, when Troy had started talking to this other fellow, I forgot his name, was sitting next to him with the glasses and kind of a striped shirt on, thin fellow. He was sitting over to Troy's left, Troy's right. Herring, that's him. He and Herring were back and forth about what to do about it. And Clara finally just leaned over to Ward, and I could hear her say, he says, well, if you just read the letter. They finally poked Troy, picked up, read the letter, and the letter said that the local dump was closed, which meant I guess they'd have to take action about the garbage pickup now.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just so much that his own request to have it done. And they were having to haul the trash over to Orange Lake, so there would be a change in the way the trash was picked up.
They had, I picked up, they have been using that McIntosh dump, and it was closed.
Yeah, I guess that's what it was, McIntosh.
And they didn't want them to use the new McIntosh system. They've got those big compressors down there now.
Oh. I didn't follow. I wasn't quite sure what was going on there.
I wasn't either. You had several shows going on. You see, J.R. says they've got on to take the Wednesday. He says they've got a whole lab big enough to put this schoolhouse in. I said, it's right there at the road, J.R. Now I lost track. But when Mr. Davis left, he turned around and nodded to Buster and to J.R. And I said to J.R., where do you know a man like that? Well, he says, I know him all my life. He says, my daddy knowed him. Well, I said, how in the world would your daddy know him? He was down here in Mickanopin. That fellow was up everything. I forget the course of it, but he gave an entirely new picture of his daddy. He didn't just stay around that J.R. Mountain thing. He said his daddy, that's the way he answered it, he said his daddy had the first automobile garage in the state of Florida.
Oh.
Then we got off on that. Could mend his method just a little bit. I mean, he talked about going into the sanitary regulation. He kept saying it over again and sort of patting it as if that the thing that we all that they ought to know about it that we didn't know. And if he turned it loose. Remember that first time we went when he goofed? He got everybody off on that report of his. He went into it and such a tale. He made that long report. Over here, he said that was.
I remember something about that.
He really goofed on that. Well, he cut Alan, but he still packed it.
Yeah, he tried to get that report in. A request in last night. And Schimmel stuck his fingers into it again for no reason at all. He was saying that there was money allocated, I think something like $5,000, to be allocated for city planning. And all you had to do was fill out a form and get on the list. He says it's too late for the money this year. We can get on the list for next year. He says, all I want is permission to fill out the form and turn it in. Schimmel took issue. Says the question is not whether we get the money, assuming we have the money, it's how the money's going to be handled.
He got Schimmel's number, hadn't he?
Uh-huh. Not only that, but what strings were attached to it. Wade was trying to keep saying, I just want to get the application in and get the money in. Let's see if we can get it. We don't even have it yet. And Schimmel kept pounding back, what about the strings? So finally, Troy took it in hand and said, well, we can refuse the money. Oh, what if we see there's going to be strings attached to it? And Shimon said, all right. As long as I know we can refuse the money and I get tied up with the strings that might be attached to it, that's okay. And he let it go.
I didn't stay. I went out to get some air, and I never was able to get back in. But George Wilson, okay, and he was talking to somebody, wasn't telling me, except I was just there, that mayor or something said about the mayor. The mayor is the one who did something. He says that mayor. He said that mayor is going to lose his head. He says he don't quit fooling with that surveyor's stick. And now that went on for some time. He had that mayor up and down and was shaking him and all like that. Mentally. That's that boundary dispute, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a surveyor's post in there, and Gordon George, the mayor, picks it up and throws it away because the fence, his fence is 3 inches over past that on George's side. And George said he owns that 3 inches, and now he owns the fence. And said, how'd you get so much land over there? Well, he said he bought it. He just leased it to start with. But they started giving him trouble, so he bought it. He says this mayor came in, was trying to buy it out from under him. I said, costly. And he told me just what it cost him, $6,000 for just a little, I don't know, the right smart piece of land. Kind of. I said, well, who owned that? Well, Lady Daly owned that, she says. I said, well, she owns the right smart over here. She says, he says she does land all over town. Little tracks and big tracks. 8 acres? I said, where's the 8 acres? He says, that's right over there by the top 10. And he says, I've already seen the specs, he called it, for a shopping center and a motor court.
Ooh.
I said, that's right there where those cattle graze. And he wasn't drinking beer last night, and I could talk to him. That beer adds enough charge, it intimidates me.
Jack Heron there? You said Heron, Fargo.
Jack Heron's brother is on the council.
Oh.
He's a councilman.
Oh.
Morganson wasn't there. Called the roll.
No, I tried to get him all day, and the telephone never answered. So he's going down to Crystal River, almost out of Springs, or wherever he goes down there. Wade's done a good bit over there, and he could do a lot more with a whole lot less effort, as I saw it last night. He's not geared perfectly, you know. He's sort of loose jointed, and he'll open his trap, and he could if somebody, you know, pounces on him, he could just turn it over to somebody else. Let them put the word in. Nobody seems to bother Evelyn. Let him make the motion. But the thing is, you know, when he was Saturday, he said all week his telephone was ringing all day. And they're talking to him about that council business. Well, I don't know. There's a lot of things. I don't know. It looks like things are out of the hands of the old people, of the people who are practical. They don't, in a way, they don't. I don't know. At Micanopy, they've got that way of throwing off on things. Now, Troy, wanted to name somebody for the committee for the trash.
Mm-hmm.
For the garbage. And he looked back there and saw J.R. And he says, would you? And J.R. called him and he says, no. He says, there's too much garbage around this town already. Throw it off, you see. And some fella was living on one side of town. I think he's back there, back in Mr. Sykes's, I'm not sure. That's his factory side, mill side.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that he was going to let him put it in. He didn't want the stuff. He could use the water to water his garden. He sure wouldn't drink it. But as soon as he found that sludge in it, he just slapped him with a lawsuit. And he said it over and over again. Now that's the attitude I've always run into over there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just the mill people, it's all of them. They're so off on things.
Yeah.
Buster does it all the time, you see.
Jack Sanders and George Wilson too. Both of them are getting ready to bring up suits.
Yeah. They've got that way. I used to encounter see it in the Sunday school class, and I thought it was right nice to have some place to go where you could throw up on things. But I kind of got tired of it. And it was the same old thing. They never got to the Sunday school lesson, and of course I figured they could do both. So you've got to see you. I just saw it now. You see, you and Jane. Now Jane has a faculty like Miss Daisy that she can, I think, from her manuscripts I've seen that, where she gets sort of that O'Neill faculty, you see, of a grasp on what goes on. Not just an understanding of it, it's a grasp of it. Well, not just relating what goes on, but it's more than that. And, you see, she's not a finished scholar, but she's gone a long ways. And, she handles those things. Now, I was surprised that she couldn't handle a bibliography. See, I started my own bibliography when they were sophomores.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think the others pay attention. They put the library books on their books on reserve, but that's all they do.
Yeah, nobody pays attention to it. I was never really exposed to bibliography at all.
Yeah.
Until, your class.
Well, but, you see, those three so far ahead of the others, you see, that it's shameful. Now, if they could make contact with the community, you see, it would work both ways. They could see what goes on, and they don't, where it is, you see. They don't see anything. They just go to the beach and putter. I go around buying those tire tools. See, looking at the merchandise. That's what the world does now, I think. They don't. All these old institutions, free institutions, are going begging. Nobody pays attention to them. And I can see now that I made my great mistake in starting out in Sunday school. Boy, I worked hard at Sunday school. And I never got to first base. I never got a toll. I was never even close to getting anywhere. The talk was never worth hearing. It was never worth hearing in Sunday school. Now, before they went in and after they went out, they might say something. But see, at this civic thing, they say something.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, they've had no practice over there. So in a way, Mr. Barr and those fellows have just done it down there with Clara Cruz in the library, where there's not room for anyone to listen. Says. And they're all uneducated. And the uneducated ones, you see, are the ones who can do it, really. And they've been pushed out. And they feel pushed out. They feel as if they can't do it. They talk big, but they don't. They won't take part. All this education business, you see, has got them outside. Now they'll vote for Mr. Wallace. Can't do it themselves. But see, somebody like Wade can sort of keep it going.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't have to put too much effort into it. And if they call him on the telephone, he can talk to them. You don't have to worry about it. They just want to talk, most of them, like Miss Guthrie. He went over there one time and talked to about the land, stayed 3 hours and had lunch. What do you say? He'd been three times and he'd spent 8 hours over there.
30 minutes on the land deal.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty much what it is. And but look where you'd get. Now you see how long it's taken me to learn that. See that? You say, what would you do? You just have to, you know, look around and take hold every now and then. I found out that I can't handle business in public. I'm not a public figure, but the way I can help is on the side, just talking to the people that do it. So I talk to Wade, and things he'd say to me would enable him to see where he's going. And now, I wouldn't be able to talk to Buster and JR, you see. That wouldn't do any good. But some of them, it might. But the ones I talk to, most of it have to be pretty well long. So it's always been. That was Jane's first exposure.
Yeah, she kept turning around and looking at me like, what's going on? Want me to come sit there and I guess give her commentary, but I didn't want to, you know.
No.
I wanted to stay right where I was.
Let her take care of herself.
Mm-hmm.
She can sit by somebody and ask them questions, what the hell is going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yell on you, she ought to come out there with you. As soon as you got there, she could have sat with somebody that was knowledgeable. Go in and sit with Miss Evelyn.
Yes.
Say, and let her go over there and say, now, my name's Jane. I just going to is it time for a little bite?
Yeah, you could look for things to talk about, and I usually be different with every customer, but when I didn't know the people, I have to pick a topic, and I found cars work pretty good.
Well, you had to do it, they didn't do it.
No, if you went out and didn't say anything, a lot of times they wouldn't say anything either. They might bitch about their health, how they'd had a knee operated on, and they were limping and everything, but that wasn't interesting. I didn't want to talk about that anyway, because they're usually gripey about it. But the housewives would be friendly, and you'd talk to them, you'd probably pick up a little better tip. So I'd go out and...
Yeah, that, say on the back, where you go?
Yeah, the back and around that trunk. So when I open up the trunk, see, I look around.
The thing you're attached to, where you
Yeah,
on?
The,
Trailer
hitch.
The hitch, yeah.
See, I'd look for that, if they had a trailer hitch. That's something to talk about, I'd say... You got a boat. I said, no, we have a trailer. So you camp a lot, and they might tell me they've been up in the Smokies, or else she'd tell me about her trailer. And I watch for to see if they had...
You're on the mites. You're not doing it what you did before, you see. You're on the mites. You're on the actual teeth.
I'd look for the wires. I said, we had a set of wires in our car to hook up to the trailer lights. We shut the hood. The trunk, it cut them in half. Said, well, we had these put on special. They'd run out underneath the car so they could plug in. It'd be a nice set, you know. Nothing, it was just made out of little bits of wire. It was all wrapped up and taped real well with a good plug and a little place to clip the plug there on the trailer hitch so it wouldn't fall down on the ground and get banged up. A lot of times they said their husbands had put it on. And they'd be proud of it, too. The lady used to come out with a VW. Bus. Well, I didn't have a car then, and I found that I could always ask people about the cars and say I was thinking about buying a car. So I told her that I was looking into it and I'd like these buses. And she was proud of that. She said, "Oh, I like this fine. I can drive anywhere I want and have all the room I need. I can put the kids in the back and they can play around. And it won't bother me. I can put all my groceries back there. I can haul as many people as I want." My husband doesn't like it as much as I do because it's a little bit underpowered, a little bit slow going up the hills. But it gets me where I want to go as fast as I want to go. But I'm in no hurry. Another lady came out and had a Mercedes-Benz, old Mercedes-Benz, the diesel. And I asked her, I said, isn't that a diesel? She said, yeah. I said, you know, I can drive from Miami to Georgia on one tank of gas. And it doesn't use gasoline, it uses fuel oil. Which is cheap, something like 27, 28 cents a gallon. Says, I've got a bigger, better car at home, but I drive this around town because it doesn't cost as much. Old gray car, and the paint was all shabby, and the seats were leather, but they were dried and torn up. She didn't mind driving it. I said, I'd like to get a hold of something like that because it would save money. And she said they picked it up, her husband had picked it up used, just kind of a second car, and now... She liked it so much, just so economical, she wouldn't drive the other car now. Made him take it. I found that one thing you could always work through was the big cars. The cars had been souped up and made for running fast. They had the rear ends jacked up on them. And they had big tires, mag wheels. Exhaust pipes would be real big, and they'd double exhaust or quadruple exhaust. And I come out and say, that's quite a car you got there. Most times they wouldn't like it. They'd say, yeah, my husband does that. Kind of his second child, but his toy that he plays with.
You know, most times.
Now, Dennis Rudisill was our meat manager.
Dennis was a big talker, always bragging about what he was going to do. Dennis had a Mustang, a 66. Had the rear end jacked way up. The car was slant down in the front. And the underside was painted orange. And if you're in traffic, you could just see right under the car, and everything would be orange under there. And these big chrome exhaust pipes, four of them, they just hung out from under the car. They weren't hooked right up to the car body. They were down, straight, so they just pointed right at you. Big tires. And then he had hood pins on it, like maybe his engine was so valuable he had to lock the hood down. And he would always tell you about how he was going to get a new rear end in it next week. And you wouldn't be able to touch him on the street. He was ready to run anybody in the store. When Dennis came to work, he would always gun the engine just as he came around the corner into the parking lot and squeal the tires, and race up to the parking lot and stop and slam on the brakes and gun the motor once and cut it off. Well, his wife would come in. She usually came in with one of her neighbors. They had a station wagon, kind of a pale blue Ford station wagon, just standard. But every once in a while, she'd have to do the driving with her neighbor, and she'd come in this little Mustang. And Ms. Rudisill just dressed immaculately. She had on very stylish pantsuits. She'd have a belt, you know, kind of a shiny belt that would hang down to one side. And her makeup would be just so, and her hair would be cut very proper, and she had a very great poise about her, and she walked around the store. She was a very striking woman, and people would notice her just by the way she walked. I'd take her groceries out, and there'd be that Mustang. I'd have her neighbor's groceries to put in it, too, and they had two or three kids with them. I'd go to open it up, and I'd look in the trunk, and there'd be old radio speakers sitting around, water pumps, and some tools. And she said, "Well, get in there what you can." I said, "Well, I think I can get most of them in." And I push all that stuff aside, push the groceries in there. She'd tell me, honestly, if he would just clean the trunk out, he's always doing something to that car. I'd slam the hood, the trunk. She'd get in the driveway. Well, she doesn't fit with that car. She started up the car and vibrate and shake, and it was noisy. She was looking so poised behind the wheel, trying to drive off like that. She should drive a Cadillac or something like this. It was very smooth and quiet. She'd have to drive off in that Mustang, and the rear end be sticking so far up in the air, and she'd have to kind of lean forward, which just messed up her poise. Off they'd drive. I ran into a lot of ladies that would complain about the junk in their trunk. Before I'd open it, they'd say, "Well, my husband keeps his tools back there." The lady that drove an old orange, the Plymouth, orange Plymouth. It was a fairly late model car. And she worked all night. She'd come in, and she'd be tired. And we'd go out to the car, and I'd have all the groceries. And then before I'd open the trunk, she'd go, "Oh, he's got all his tools back there." I go, "Oh, let me see what I can get in." And open up the trunk. Well, those trunks should come with a covering of some kind. The covering's gone. Tools are scattered everywhere. It's got a toolbox. The toolbox is never closed. It's always open. The tools are scattered out all over the trunk. Old Clorox bottles have been cut open to drain oil in, and then just thrown in the trunk there. It's dripping all over everything. Well, at first I thought, well, this trunk must be the man's whole toolbox. I just won't mess around with anything. But if I just put bags in there, screwdrivers would poke holes in them, and they'd get torn up and some of the other tools. So after a while, I'd just push aside, and the wives would always tell me, "Just put it anywhere you want and push all those tools aside." So I just grabbed what I wanted and throw it out of the sides of the trunk, see? I set the grocery down. She was happy as long as those groceries got first place. One lady came in, had a brown Ford Fairlane, and she bought usually over $100 worth of merchandise. And it would always be four baskets, and I always had to bag it because I was the only bag boy there on Fridays, and how I hated that. They called me up front around 11. And I knew that's what it was going to be. And I'd come out with this little wagon train of groceries to her car. She'd have two or three people with her, and we'd go to the trunk. And she, every week, she'd say something about how many bags we'd get in there. One week she'd say, "Don't even open the trunk. I don't have the key. You just cannot get anything in there." I'd go around the back seat, and I could tell there was a lot in the trunk because there were tools inside and in the back. Some weeks we'd open the trunk. She'd say, "I just don't know." We'd open it up, and there'd be a little room. I'd get I used to put the potatoes and things like that back there that weren't damaged too easy in a couple bags. Well, I could never get everything in the trunk because it was so full of tools. And one lady had an old, the big Pontiac Bonneville out in the trunk with four wire wheels back there. Fire wheels off in Austin Healing. Now, those are expensive. You don't find them too much anymore. I said, my husband's got a sports car. He said, would you like to buy those wheels? Like, they just turned over that half of the car to her husband. I gave up. He darn fighting.
I didn't realize there was so many tool chests.
Yeah. And you could tell there were carpenters, plumbers, find big monkey wrenches back there and pipe fittings.
Oh, they weren't all just mechanics.
No, they weren't just plain tools. And it seems to me there was like a color to it. It was all very dull. One color if he was a plumber. Now, if he was an auto mechanic, you'd have dark blotches of grease here and oil over there, and just the biggest variety of tools you've ever seen. And some of the carpenters, it was just the neatest toolbox you'd ever seen. Because it was made out of wood. I've seen them do that. And they make the toolbox themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And everything is neatly arranged in the trunk. But the auto mechanics seem to be the sloppiest. And they probably, a lot of them weren't even mechanics. They were just piles of tools there in the bag.
Junk talk.
Mm-hmm.
That is amazing. That is. And you never knew that was going to be a first. I never thought about that.
Now that's what we used to do with Barbara after supper. We'd be talking. Something would come up. And Barbara would pick it up. I could tell when she made contact with the subject.
Mm-hmm.
I said, all right, let me turn this on. And then I used to have the machine in here, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a painful thing. Just sit there and talk with
the mic right
going.
Here, and she'd have to hold it.
That's right. That's right. The machine, right.
And say it all over again.
Yeah.
We ought to play some of Barbara's.
Yes, I think we ought.
Moments.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of them in town.
It's just a few, I think, really, of Barbara's, of her talking, her talks that are interesting in that, really. Cookies on it. And his is not a very good one because he was sitting over here and his voice was low and the microphone was over here. And that was a time that they had Alvin, you know Alvin? Alvin's a big mechanic, and he runs the Windsor Baptist Church.